You're listening to Becoming Wildly Resilient, brought to you by University of Kentucky Human Resources Health and Wellness. Join us as we explore tools, practices, meditations, and conversations with the members of the UK community. Together, we will discover how we can thrive at work, home, and beyond. You're listening to Becoming Wildly Resilient Conversations. My name is Sebastian Kalmes. I'm a wellness specialist with UKHR Health and Wellness and your host for today's episode. Habits. When we think of habits, what do we think of? We may think of behaviors or patterns of behavior. We may think of all the habits we'd like to stop, or we may think of all the habits we'd like to adopt but can't seem to stick with. Why does it seem like it takes so much willpower to end an undesirable habit and just as much to take on a new habit? What are habits? What are habitats? And what is habitual? My guest today is Dr. Shannon Sauerzavala. Dr. Sauerzavala is an associate professor of psychology and clinical psychology at the University of Kentucky. She's a Gettysburg College alum and received her doctorate in clinical psychology from the University of Kentucky in 2011. Along with being a dedicated mentor and teacher to her students, Dr. Sauerzavala is the co-founder and director of clinical services at the University of Kentucky Clinic for Emotional Health, where it is her mission to improve the lives of people with mental health difficulties by expanding access to evidence-based treatment, training future treatment providers, and conducting cutting-edge clinical research. Additionally, Dr. Sauerzavala co-developed the Unified Protocol for the Transdiagnostic Treatment of Emotional Disorders, an internationally recognized and effective cognitive behavioral intervention for anxiety, depressive, and related disorders. Dr. Sauerzavala has co-authored over 100 peer-reviewed articles, numerous book chapters, and three books, the most recent being Neuroticism, A New Framework for Emotional Disorders and Their Treatment, which can be found in hardcover and ebook formats. Dr. Sauerzavala, what are habits and why should we care about them?
I'll start with why we should care about them and then go back into what habits are. Basically, we have, over the course of any day, an infinite amount of decisions that we need to make. Most are not conscious, right? Where we make the decision to get up, we make the decision to buckle up in the car. And given the sheer amount of information that people are taking in about their environment, we have to automate some of that. Otherwise, we'd still all be in our bedrooms, not even out of bed yet. So that's an important reason why, as much as we can automate as possible, the more resources that we have freed up to engage in behaviors that are fulfilling and in line with our values.
You're saying that habits are actually something that make us more efficient human beings. Mm-hmm. And then they open up mental, physical resources to solve deeper problems by automating other things.
Exactly, right? I think the quintessential example of that is how Steve Jobs would wear the same black turtleneck every day, right? And the idea is that he didn't have to think about what he was going to wear, right? It was that same behavioral habit. And in doing so, more mental space was freed up to innovate.
So that was a small decision to make, waking up, what am I going to wear? But it took very little time to make that decision so he could use those resources for a more innovative decision.
Exactly. And so we all do variations on that every day. We get up, we go to the bathroom, we brush our teeth, we make our coffee. And a lot of those things we're not really thinking about, right? And if we had to spend time kind of deciding, okay, I think I'll brush my teeth now, or should I brush my teeth now, that would take up mental resources that are limited.
In a way, if we're doing something habitually, does that mean that we're unconscious of that behavior?
Not necessarily, right? It's just you're taking kind of the decision-making out of it. This is what I always do. Like, you know that you're putting your seatbelt on when you get in the car. It just is such it's such an automated process that it's kind of a no-brainer. You just do it.
How about habits that have become no-brainers for us, but maybe are no longer serving us?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I've kind of been talking about the more sort of adaptive versions of habits and how they can be time-saving and efficient, but we can also automate behaviors that are not great for us in the long term. So like snoozing the alarm, for instance, like I wake up and I snooze my alarm and that's just become the habit or the pattern over time. And it's maybe not in line with my values to get up and exercise. So that's an example. Or people develop habits related to how they cope with emotions, right? So like I'm feeling anxious in this situation or this conversation that I'm having with somebody. And whenever I feel anxious, I seek to avoid that. Like I split, or maybe I don't bring up the difficult topic, right? I've trained myself to respond.
You kind of mentioned like an emotional habit or like a mental habit. Mm-hmm. Is it true that there are, say, like physical habits, emotional habits, mental habits? Are they dissimilar or are they similar?
I think it's a similar sort of process, right? So I'm a psychology professor, and anyone that's taken like intro to psych has probably learned about conditioning. And conditioning is basically increasing the likelihood that a behavior or a thought or an emotion or physical sensations will happen again in the future. And whenever we do something that is rewarded, we're likely to do it again. And so we can kind of train ourselves over time. So like when we feel anxious and then we sort of leave the conversation, or we feel anxious at a party and we leave, or we are nervous that we sent an email with a typo, so we check, right? Typically we get a kind of surge of relief that's really short term, and that trains us to do that again. That's how habits kind of develop over time. So they can be habits that are positive, kind of that upward cycle where, developing my morning routine so that I make my coffee and then I exercise, and kind of one thing leads to another. I'm feeling really good about that, and I'm seeing changes. I'm getting stronger, and that's reinforcing. So I keep doing the habit over and over again.
Gotcha. So is that like a snowball effect?
Yeah. Yeah. But you can see that in the opposite direction as well. You know, the more I avoid when I'm feeling anxious, the next time I feel anxious, maybe in a completely different situation, I'm like, oh, I know that feeling. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna get out of here. I'm gonna do something to avoid it. So conditioning, right, whether or not you're sort of rewarded for engaging in a particular behavior, or, you know, you had kind of asked the question to, is a habit just like behavioral? And so I've been kind of talking about it in behavioral terms, but you can have mental habits, right? So thought patterns. There's really good research to suggest that when you think a particular thought over and over again in kind of similar situations, that it kind of lowers the threshold to think it in the future, right? So if you make a mistake and think, man, I'm a stupid loser. The next time you make a mistake or you forget something or you say something awkward in a conversation, you're more likely to think, I'm a stupid loser. I mean, that's not really based on fact. It's just because you have trained yourself to think that thought in those situations. That's something that I work on with my patients when we talk about like cognitive therapy, getting people to identify those mental habits that they've gotten into and reminding them, you're not thinking this thought because it's true. You're thinking this thought because you've trained yourself to think this thought in situations like this.
Yeah.
You can also think about physical habits. And I don't know if this is necessarily like a habit, but I think conditioning plays a role here, right? So again, back to like psychology 101, people learn about Pavlov's dogs. So the idea that you ring a bell and the dog starts to salivate, right? Well, maybe for some people, when they walk into a crowded grocery store, their heart starts beating and they start sweating. Or maybe when I'm up to watch a UK game, my heart starts beating, but it's because I'm excited, right? And so we're kind of conditioned to have these responses.
Right. So like when you mentioned walking into Rupp and your heart immediately starts to beat a little bit faster, I mean, that is a very excited environment. So how much does environment play into habit formation?
Yeah, I think it can. I think we can use our environment to sort of set us up for good habits, but I think our environment can also lead to engaging in behaviors that we might not want to. So for instance, if you're trying to build up a habit of brushing your teeth, maybe you leave your toothpaste on the counter, or you're trying to exercise. So you lay your workout clothes out the night before, right? That's kind of crafting your environment so that it's more conducive to engaging in the behaviors. Mm-hmm. that you want to. You could think about environment too as like your schedule. One of my goals is to walk in the morning before coming to work, and can't do that if I schedule myself an appointment at 8:30. So it can kind of structure my environment to build up that habit so that I have time in the morning. I think on the flip side of that, right, we could think about an example of somebody that uses substances or wants to cut down on their drinking, and they continue to hang out with their friends at bars or go to parties where other people are drinking. That's an example of an environment making a lot harder to change your behavior and kind of pushing you towards the habit that you're trying to change.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I mean, even in my own history, once I've decided, okay, this behavior is no longer serving me, but the friends I have still want to participate in a certain activity. So then it's okay, well, I have to remove myself from that environment. And that even meant sometimes not spending time with those certain friends. I could see how environment does play a large role. And then you said, if you want to work out, go ahead and set out your clothes the day before. That's in an effort to make it easily accessible to execute that behavior.
Right. Then the more you do it, the more it becomes more automatic.
Do you think that there are doorway or gateway habits? Say I want to do a really big thing, run a marathon. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I'm not going to jump to that. Is it a real thing to do a smaller habit and then that leads to a little bit harder of a habit to develop and then a little bit harder of a habit? And then also in the opposite direction, where say I do hit snooze on my alarm like 2 or 3 times in the morning, does that set me up for another bad habit? Like maybe now I'm rushing to do my morning routine and then I'm rushing to go to work. Is that something that is present in people's lives?
Yeah. So like all things that have to do with psychology, the answer is it depends. I like to think that there are no bad behaviors or good behaviors. It really depends on the person, right? If you don't have to be up for work, say you're self-employed and you're kind of a night owl, snoozing your alarm is maybe not bad, right? If it's not getting in the way. But for other people, it is. Like, I have to get up with my alarm because I need to get up before my kids so that I can exercise. Otherwise, I won't. And I cannot believe the lie that I'll do it when I get home from work, because it's not true. So I'll kind of back up a little bit and think about, if you want to change your habits, where should you start? I always encourage people to start with their values, like what's important to you. And that's different for everybody. So when we think about values, are kind of defined as your life direction, where you want to be headed. And values can fall into a bunch of different domains, right? We hold values in our family relationships. What do I want to be like as a mom and a wife and a daughter? What do I want to be about in that capacity? What do I want to be about, you know, in my career or in my like commitment to lifelong learning? What do I want to be like as like a citizen of Lexington or the United States or the world? What do I want to be like in terms of somebody that practices self-care or hobbies or leisure? And I usually encourage people to spend a little time thinking. I mean, you can Google just like values and you can find these values.
I've done that before.
Yeah. You can find out what's important to you. And that's a great place to start. Say, I'm going to get up every morning and exercise, but that's not actually that important to you. You just think that you should do that because it's January or because, I don't know, but your values in another area kind of outweigh that, then you're going to set yourself up for failure, right? So you really want to think about, well, what is important to me? And then if you do decide it's important to me to take care of my physical fitness and it's important to me to work hard on goals for a long time and to like persevere, then maybe running a marathon would be like a great sort of long-term goal. It's in line with your values. So once you've decided that, then you can start to think about like, how do I break this down into concrete actions? What's one thing that you could do right now that will take you 5 to 10 minutes, but that will bring you closer to your goal? It could be as small as go online and download a training plan, or it could be order new sneakers or whatever it is, right? It's just something that you could do right now. And then thinking about, okay, what would be kind of like the next step that would be like a little bit harder, but still no sweat, I could do it. And then what would be the next step after that? And so thinking about cultivating a habit, right? It's not just like building mileage, I feel like, for a marathon. It's like cultivating that habit of running frequently. How do I need to structure my environment differently so that I can run 3 to 4 times a week? Because that's what I would need to do if I wanted to run a marathon. What would I need to do to think about setbacks, right? I told you one of my goals is to walk more. Well, it's really cold, and that sucks. And so I ordered some fleece-lined leggings. I ordered myself an under-the-desk walking treadmill. You know, so start just thinking about the changes that I could make in my environment, right, that would make it more likely for me to achieve the goal.
For me, one of the biggest takeaways so far from what you said is that focus on values and who you want to become, and then that will help you figure out what habits to shoot for, and that will lead you to where you want to go. Would you say that if we wanted to form new habits, focus more on who we want to become, like more about our identity and less about certain goals we want to achieve? So instead of me thinking I have this goal, I want to run a marathon, instead of approaching it that way, I could approach it, you know, well, I could set out my shoes and my running clothes the day before so they're accessible, and then I could run just for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And then I repeat that habit, and then I'm becoming a runner because I'm not really focusing on that huge goal. I'm focusing on sort of morphing myself into who I want to become.
Yeah, right. If you don't identify as a runner, then running a marathon feels, first of all, why? And second of all, huge. But if you run little by little, increasing your mileage, and you get to that point where you see yourself as a runner, then making that jump to, oh, I just have to run for longer, is more manageable.
Yeah.
So I think identity is really important. I'll come back to that in a minute. And the values part is sort of thinking about your why and like choosing what behavioral changes you want to make based on what's important to you rather than what like society says or what your friends are doing. Because if you want to be successful, it has to actually be meaningful to you. So I think that's the first thing, is like picking habits that are actually in line with who you want to be. And then going back to identity, I think identity and like what we tell ourselves goes back to kind of the mental habit that can be really important for whether or not we do things, right? So if you are a UK student and you want to stop procrastinating and work on your papers before they're due, but you tell yourself, I'm the type of person that needs the adrenaline of the last minute to get it done the day before, I just couldn't possibly motivate myself to do it without that. Well, that's not actually literally true, right? That's a thing we tell ourselves. I need the adrenaline. Well, actually, that's not literally true. You could actually write a paragraph each day. You don't actually need adrenaline to write a paper. So figuring out if there are any of these kind of thoughts that get in the way. I think some people identify as like people that exercise or people that go to the gym or runners. And there are people that don't. But for their health, they need to be exercising more. And I think it becomes like a bigger leap if you're like, well, I'm not one of those gym people. Mm-hmm. When in reality, exercise is for everybody.
Yeah. Do you think that some people have this ability to break habits they don't want or build new habits they want easier than others? Or is that a misperception?
Yeah, I think the short answer is yes. I think some people, it's easier for some people. So one of the things that I study in my research program is how people's personalities can kind of affect their mental health largely. And just like a quick primer on personality, all the differences between people in terms of personality can be reduced to 5 different domains. So it's the extent to which you experience negative emotions, the extent to which you're conscientious and you follow through on things, the extent to which you're agreeable and personable, how extroverted versus introverted you are, and how flexible and open you are. And so people that are higher in conscientiousness can make a plan and follow through on it versus being like impulsive and, you know, kind of last minute-y, right? So people that can have the personality where they can make a plan and follow through on it, naturally, those folks are going to be better at changing their habits, right? Mm. I think neuroticism, which is the tendency to experience negative emotions, that can also have an effect, because if you have this habit where you play on your phone anytime you get anxious, right, that's going to be really hard to break if you feel anxious a lot, you know, or you feel anxious really strongly and viscerally, versus if you're a kind of person that just doesn't feel their emotions really strongly or more stoic, that's not as tall of a task to ask you to change that. So I think those two kind of personality domains can affect how easy it is on surface to change our behavior. At the same time, a lot of my research is focused on like how we can change our personality. How can we become more conscientious? How can we become less neurotic? So even those things aren't set in stone. And really the way you change your personality is by taking those small steps, changing your habits, right? Because personality is your characteristic way of thinking, feeling, and behaving. And so if you change how you think about yourself, oh, I guess I'm not the type of person that needs the adrenaline of the last minute. And then you change your behavior, right? You develop a habit where you get a planner and you plan out when you're going to write a little bit of your paper and break it down. And you maintain those changes over time. Then you've changed your characteristic way of thinking and behaving, change your personality.
Gotcha. Nice. For people that may be a little bit more impulsive or have some neurotic tendencies, they can use some of these tools like breaking it down to not only develop new desirable habits, but also even changing their personality or how they respond to things like anxiety or trauma.
That's right.
That's really, really helpful. I know that I had to change a lot of my behaviors and my habits. And one of the best ways I did that was to remove those things from my space. So what about willpower? Is willpower a real thing? And does it relate to our discussion on habits at all?
Yeah, I don't really know the answer to that or like what the science is on that. My sense is not really. It's not like some people have more willpower than others. I think people have sort of a limited amount of, and we sort of talked about this at the beginning, like a limited amount of energy to make decisions or to withstand temptation. I think a really good example of that is, you know, I bought groceries and I have the intention to cook dinner when I get home, but I had a really crappy day and I didn't meal prep. And so I'm definitely going to order. I'm going to order in. And so I think that's an example of if my day had gone more smoothly or if I had prepped in advance, I wouldn't have needed as much like energy, but the bad day drained my energy and I didn't prep. So like I needed more energy to cook and I just got home and was like, meh, I'm gonna get DoorDash.
So it sounds like what you're saying is that if we have a good system, then it will require us, it will require less decision-making power, less willpower to make those decisions. So it's not that some people have more willpower than others. It's that people have designed better systems.
Yeah, like people have better habits. It kind of goes back to the discussion we had at the beginning, right, around automating things. Like anything that can become kind of a no-brainer. Yeah, I brush my teeth, obviously, can make it easier to move towards our goals rather than be like, meh, I don't feel like it, right? If I always meal prep on Sundays, it's much easier for me, even when I've had a bad day, to just like, make dinner. It's just what I do. I'm a person that makes dinner when I get home, right? That's that identity piece.
That's that identity. According to Dr. BJ Fogg's concept of tiny habits, he recommends taking a small, already established habit like turning on the coffee machine in the morning and following it up with a new habit that you'd like to add, like doing 5 push-ups. And you can tell yourself, in the morning after I turn on the coffee machine, I will do 5 push-ups. Do you see this habit stacking method as an effective way to build and sustain new habits?
I think that probably works for some people and maybe doesn't work for other people. So like a lot of times people talk about the morning routine, which I think is this idea of habit stacking, right? Where it's I do this and then I do this and then I do this, right? I think that it could increase the efficiency with which one could automate a process, right? So if you're already doing something like brushing your teeth, well, it should be like pretty easy, right, to add flossing. And I use that example because like lots of people brush their teeth, but not lots of people floss, right?
But yes,
you know, so I think that calls into question that idea. I think what helps people build habits is really connecting with their why. Like, why am I doing this? And like choosing to build habits that are personally meaningful to them.
Yeah.
And thinking about how to make it fit into their life, right? Just to go back to the idea of running. Like before I had my kids, I was an avid runner. And after I had my kids, I really couldn't because having kids messed up my hips, long story short. And I still identified as a runner for a long time and would try and then would have to go to physical therapy and be like really discouraged. And so I made a shift, right? I was like, well, exercise is important to me, but I can't do it the way that I used to, or I can't do it the way that I like want to or feel like I should. Mm-hmm. And so I worked hard to kind of change what my idea of the goal was, right? Which is just to move every day. And that becomes a lot more manageable.
Yeah. So in a way, did you kind of have to shift how you saw yourself, shift your identity?
Yeah. Like I'm just a person that really values exercise and movement, right? But doesn't have to be a particular thing. Another thing I learned through this like investigation of exercise is that the high intensity interval training, I hate it. It's awful. And if that was my goal to do that every day, because it's supposed to be the most efficient, like I don't do it. I wake up and I'm like, meh, I'm much more likely to snooze the alarm. But if it's yoga or Pilates or going for a walk and listening to a podcast, much more likely to do it.
I see. Do you think that there are some people that would have a harder time with that flexibility piece? Like they used to always be a runner, but then they're in a new season of life and now that's difficult for them. How can we be more kind to ourselves with that transition?
Yeah, I think that can be a real challenge, right? So I always tell my patients, like, wouldn't it be nice if we could beat ourselves up for not being able to do something and then be able to do it? And it just doesn't work, right? And, you know, we try to just be, oh, I really should be doing this, but we're not learning from the fact that we're not, that's not working. And so instead of trying to force it, figuring out, well, how can I modify the goal a little bit so it's important to me and achievable to me? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're not static and we're very dynamic as human beings. So as we go through our seasons of life, our values change too. Mm-hmm. So then it would be silly for our values to change as we go through life, but not our behaviors and our habits, because right, those are no longer in alignment. So we want to bring our habits and our behaviors back into alignment with our values as our values change.
Right. And so taking stock of that periodically through life, right? I mean, it used to be that before I had kids, I would always try to have no emails in my inbox before I would leave to go home from work. And that's just a goal that stressed me out after I had kids, because it's like I had to go home at 5 and pick them up from daycare. I mean, it was part of my value to be like present parent. And I was like, oh, I'm not doing this thing that I am supposed to be doing.
So you kind of had two conflicting values mm-hmm. there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Well, in the habits conversation, there's a lot of talk about dopamine and its effect on habit formation. What is that? What is dopamine and how does that affect our habits and our behaviors?
Yeah. So dopamine is a neurotransmitter and it's usually associated with like pleasure or positive emotions. And so when we, I mean, this relates to the conversation that we've already been having about reinforcement. Like when you do something and it feels good, right? Maybe you're getting a dopamine release, then it increases the likelihood that you're going to do it in the future. And so that could be studying and then you get a good grade and you're like, oh, I'm happy about this. That reinforces that behavior of studying. So you do it again in the future. Unfortunately, there are things that feel good in the short term that screw us long term, right? It feels good a lot of the time to use drugs. And most people would agree that there aren't really long-term benefits of that particular habit. It can feel really good in the moment to snap at somebody sarcastically who's kind of irritating us. Most people would say that feels good in a moment. And then moments later, you feel guilty or it like affects the relationship. Mm-hmm. I think there is this chemical component of reinforcement, but I also think that it's really important for people to use some of their more like cognitive faculties to override like just seeking pleasure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For the sake of pleasure, if it's not consistent with their values in the long term.
Yeah. So it seems like studying for a test in the short term, there's not a lot of pleasure in that. Maybe for someone that doesn't like that, but getting the good grade, that's where they feel good about
right.
that past behavior. So there's kind of like a delayed gratification there.
Yeah. That's where the cognitive piece comes in, where you're able to kind of connect the two. And that's not necessarily chemical.
When you say the cognitive piece, meaning in the moment that I'm studying through self-talk, I tell myself, now I'm not going to really enjoy studying right now, but I am going to really like it once I get that good grade.
or in the past, I have gotten a good grade and that has felt good to me and I want to get that again. And this is how I do it.
That's good. Well, what are some tools and strategies and attitudes for creating new habits that we desire? For you personally, what has worked for you in realigning your habits with your values as you've gone through the seasons of life?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question and something that I've thought a lot about, you know, sort of like the personal reasons why I'm interested in personality change as like part of my research. And I used to be like extremely lazy and not particularly ambitious or motivated, just the kind of person that would just clean by stuffing things under the bed, or I failed Algebra 2 for the year because I didn't go enough times and had to retake it my senior year of high school. And so it's really hard to square that person with the person I am now, which is like a successful academic, run a very tight ship at home, inbox zero, personalized planner that's monogrammed. It's a big difference, yeah, in sort of those like intervening 20 years. And I actually think this is like the perfect example of small changes, right? And I think about kind of the turning point for me was like finding something that I was interested in. And it does go back to the cheesy example of studying for a test. I was interested in my freshman psychology class. And in contrast to how I approached the rest of my classes my freshman year, like studied for this test and did really well. And apparently most people don't do well on the first exam. And so the TA was like, you should seriously consider majoring in psychology. And like the grade and like that feedback, that like identity piece, like that felt really good. And so then I was like, oh, like I'm going to keep doing well in this class.
Yeah.
And it started to spread to like psychology classes, but I still was like not doing great in my other classes. And I kind of made the decision like, oh, like I like psychology and I'm really good at it. I want to go to grad school for psychology. And then kind of got the rude awakening that I'm not going to get in because my GPA isn't good enough. Mm. And so then that was like a negative feeling, right? Like shame, guilt, you know, kind of like disappointment, right? And in the same way that we're motivated to repeat behaviors that make us feel good, like studying for psychology and doing well, we're motivated to engage in behaviors that make us feel those negative emotions less. It's called negative reinforcement. It's like taking away a thing that's bad or uncomfortable. If I can improve my GPA, I won't feel guilty anymore. So then I really started to apply myself across all of my subjects and, you know, eventually got into graduate school. So that's just a kind of a brief example. And then graduate school's hard. So I got my first planner. And I think this is where the identity piece came in. I was good at it. And that felt really nice. And I saw like some of my cohort mates feeling really like impostery. And I was like, no, I'm good at this. I identify with psychology. And in, you know, in academics, there are like really clear reinforcers, like you're supposed to publish papers, you're supposed to get grants, right? And so then you feel really good about that. And then late, like now, I have people that are counting on me. So I have graduate students, I have undergrads, and me responding to their emails and giving them feedback on their papers. That's all stuff that helps them be successful. And I identify as a person that cares about other people and wants to lift other people up. So it kind of keeps me motivated to do it. Yeah. But like it all started with studying for one test. I really think that, you know, upward cycled from there.
It sounds like you can really place yourself in that seat again, studying for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and it seems like this all started from you found this genuine interest in psychology, and then that you started to care about it, and then you got that positive reinforcement from the TA. Mm-hmm. And, hey, you're good at this. And then you're like, yeah, I guess I am. And then it was starting to snowball from there.
Right.
And then it even sounds like the value has evolved even more into now you're a part of this team and people are counting on you and you want to show up for them. And that shows up in your family life because now you're a mother too.
And I think that value was always there. Like I always wanted to sort of to show up for my friends. And so like when that value kind of aligns with this increased conscientiousness, right, where it's I do care about other people. And so how can I use that as a motivator to get me to work?
So we can change our personality, but we just have to do it in the way that aligns with our values. When you were talking about yourself, it was reminding me of myself in my academic career because I was halfway through my junior year and I was barely passing classes. and I actually failed a class. And then I was like, hang on a second. This is not who I want to be. This is not what I want to do. I feel like I'm wasting my time in a way. Actually, my journey sounded like yours, because once I started actually trying, and then my professor was like, hey, you're smart. You can do this. I was reinforced, like, yeah, I guess I can. And then it was upward from there.
Yeah. And we take the same approach in therapy, right? So changing your behaviors, changing your thought patterns, a lot of us can do it on our own. And a lot of us can't. A lot of us need help, right? So a lot of these tools for changing your personality or changing your habits that I've been talking about today are really part of cognitive behavioral therapy. And whether you're coming to therapy because you have panic attacks or because you're depressed or because you just want to make some changes in your life to feel more fulfilled, these are some of the techniques, right? Like thinking differently about yourself and about the world, making behavioral changes, and then having them be reinforced so that we call it behavioral experiments. Go do this public speaking thing and see if your hypothesis that it's going to be terrible comes true. And if it doesn't, then you learned something that it wasn't actually that bad and you can keep doing it.
So it's moving past our assumptions and giving it a good shot and experimenting, because we may prove ourselves wrong. That's right. We may realize that, no, I don't need adrenaline to finish this paper at the last minute. Awesome. So in your lifelong learning journey, what are some of the resources that you would want to turn on to people that are starting to take on this journey for themselves?
Yeah. There are countless self-help books dedicated to this, right? Like Atomic Habits comes to mind as like a sort of start small, chain your habits. And I think there is like an identity piece in there too. So that's like a nice, easy to read popular press book that people could look at. If you feel like you need more help, I'm a big advocate of going to therapy. If you are in Lexington, some good resources are the Harris Center, which is the training clinic associated with UK's clinical psychology PhD program. And the reason I recommend the Harris Center is because it's on a sliding fee scale. So the sticker price for a therapy session is $50, but most people pay $10, $5, because it's based on what you feel like you can pay. It's on a sliding fee scale. So it's a really nice resource for the community. And you're getting students that are supervised by licensed PhD level clinical psychologists like myself. So you're getting really good care at a tiny price. I'll also kind of shout out my clinic, which is called the Clinic for Emotional Health. And it's a research clinic. So all the treatment that we provide there is completely free. We actually have a treatment right now that's focused on changing personality. It starts with values and then has skills for thinking, skills for behavior change, and then also includes some mindfulness. And if you are interested, you can go to our website, again, Clinic for Emotional Health here in Lexington, and you can take a screener and see if you'd be eligible for any of the studies.
Nice. Thank you so much for sharing those resources that we can check out. To summarize, what do you think are the key takeaways from this discussion? If maybe someone only tuned in for this part, what do you want them to know?
Start with what's important to you and figuring out what's important to you, right? You know, it's January right now. So most people are probably thinking, I need to get in better shape. I need to exercise more. I need to lose weight, right? Those goals and the habits that are associated with them are not going to stick if that's not that important to you. If you're just doing it because it's January and everyone else is doing it and you feel like you should, right? So figure out what's important to you in your life. Rank your values and then figure out the places in your life where your behavior is not lining up with your values. And that's where I would start in terms of what habits to change. Once you're there, then it's changing your behaviors, right? And thinking small. What is something I can do right now? What's something that would push me a little bit, but I could totally get it done this week? And then like, where am I headed step by step? And then it's changing your thinking, right? Are you the type of person that like is an exerciser? Or are you like, I hate this, but I'm doing it, you know? And think about if you can shift that a little bit.
Excellent. Well, Dr. Sauerzavala, thank you for being on this show with us. I feel like I am uplifted and I'm ready to continue this season of my life and just keep going with my best foot forward. And I feel like the people that were listening will have a lot of value to like take from this. I would agree with you that this habits discussion does center around our values and what we care about. And I think through those values, we can start to create changes that make our lives what we want them to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
So thank you again.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for joining me for today's discussion with Dr. Shannon Sauerzavala. I hope this conversation has inspired you to take a deeper look into your values so that you may have the courage to let go of habits that no longer serve you and choose habits that move you closer to becoming the person you want to be. If you're enjoying Becoming Wildly Resilient, please subscribe to or follow the podcast on the platforms you listen to podcasts most. That's a great zero-cost way to support the University of Kentucky community as we continue to expand our culture of service and well-being. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Becoming Wildly Resilient. This podcast is brought to you by University of Kentucky Human Resources Health and Wellness. We offer a wide range of online and in-person services to support the well-being of UK employees, retirees, and their spouses. You can find experts in mental health, personal resilience, nutrition, and physical activity. We're ready to meet you where you are and address your unique needs. To learn more about the work, life, and well-being services offered by UK Human Resources, visit hr.uky.edu/wellbeing. You can also connect with us on social media and YouTube by searching at UKY Wellness or by email at healthandwellness@uky.edu.